I'm just letting this be added. All right. Welcome to the Funny Style Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Robinson. Today we have
Brian Milligan,
Corey Cognac,
Rafiq Shaheen,
and
Kyle Groom.
Thank you, man, for coming and doing this. We're actually live from Twisted Birch, where we have the show tonight. So I'm super excited. And lesson in comedy that I learned was last time I had you booked here, the show got canceled last minute, and I was horrified.
Because I had been booked so far in advance, and I had so many people offering me that weekend, like, you know, sometimes it's for more money, but I'm going to keep my word. But then, you know, things happen, and it's what happens.
But I was like, as soon as there's another available, we're going to get Kyle.
We've been doing this show for a year. It's the only one.
Only one that's ever been canceled. Yeah. But
thanks, man.
It'll be a really good one. This one is usually pretty packed out, and they're like a fun...
It'll be good.
Yeah. And then we got three other venues in town that I think we can bring you back to in our county.
So the community of Rockledge really supports comedy?
Or it's Brevard.
It's Brevard.
Like
Brevard.
All of Brevard.
All of Brevard.
It's Melbourne, Titusville, you know.
Tri-State.
Tri-County.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a growing area. They're getting more and more shows. Yeah. Like once a month, you get a new message from somebody. They're like, oh, I ever started this show.
Well, we have a lot of young comics here. You know what I mean? So like our scene is building. And they're hungry. You know what I mean? Like they're building rooms, and then we got like more like veteran guys like Chris and Frank and Paul, and like guys that have been doing it for a long time.
They use the word veteran real. I've been doing it six years.
Frankie's been doing it for 30. You know,
Because how long have you been doing stand-up?
30. I started like 95.
See, you look younger than you are, I think is what it is. Because, like, I saw you, when I realized how much older you were than me, I saw, I think it was the roast. It was either the roast of Patrice O'Neill or Rich Voss.
Patrice O'Neill.
And I was watching, I was like, wait a minute, Kyle's been doing this for a long
time. That's when I just got to New York, though.
Really?
Because I went to New York in 2002 from Miami.
Okay.
And, and then I was working, like, you know, all the clubs. And Greg Giraldo got me into the comedy set. He was so all those guys were, I was a baby on a tough crowd. Like,
How long had you been doing stand-up before you moved?
I've been doing it 6 years now.
And then before you went to New York?
Yeah, before I went to New York. I quit my job in 2000, though. I had been doing stand-up and my day job up until then for 5 years.
Okay.
And then I was able to make money to feed myself and pay my bills.
So how long, so back then, obviously, like 2001, how were you able to pay your bills so soon as a comic?
Because back then it wasn't as many comedians. And Def Jam was still kind of hot, like, you know, and those urban rooms were hot. So, and a lot of comics, they didn't fly in town, so promoters would tell me to do 20, 30 minutes, you know? And I got good enough and strong. I mean, I was doing a lot of huckabucking and, you know, crowd, you know, dancing and screaming and you know, I was, you know, urban
Def
comic.
Jam shit.
Def Jam shit, you know? And that's how I was able to survive, because people would book me the headline and I could make money. And then I moved to New York and got into college, I got a manager.
Did you do that through NACA?
Like, yeah, I did get college through NACA, was 1 year through NACA. I got maybe like 55 schools.
Jesus, that's why I got
so, they pay great for, you know, the age I was.
And,
so by pay, do they pay like $1,000 or something like that? I thought it was.
You have a range. You could go from like your range could be $1,000 to $2,000, $1,500 to $2,500.
If that was 50 of them, that's at least like $60,000 a year off of that one.
Over 100,000 just in colleges. You know, bought me a leather jacket.
You're like, I made it.
And so for comics who are working their way up now, do you still recommend they try to go that route, or is there something you think works better for them?
The getting a follower on the internet now is the route to go. You know what I mean? If you a comic. Now that's what I recommend. But sure, if it's an outlet and you could get into colleges and get a showcase, I could imagine it's much more challenging now because sensitivity, like people, like then I got 55 schools, right? Mm-hmm. And that I just did my Def Jam set.
Yeah.
Maybe a year later, I went up and I said nigga once. And the dynamic changed just in a year. Like the temperature, the wind changed. It was like, nah, we don't, nah, nah. We're not, no.
We don't play that.
Yeah.
Why is he? Were you able to put out like any type of actual material back then? Like a special, anything? Because there wasn't, it was like maybe.
Yeah, well, I did a DVD.
Yeah.
Really?
My first DVD was called Miami Nights. And it was based on just, it was all the material I did that I started in Miami, the stuff that I was doing. Miami, so I filmed it in Miami, did like a little sketch in the front, and I would sell my DVD after my show.
Did you try to sell it to like Comedy Central or HBO or anything?
No, it wasn't, no.
It wasn't
like that.
Yeah.
Put that shit on YouTube.
That's what I was going to say, that's what all there was.
But I saw,
on YouTube, as a matter of fact.
Because I saw, when I was doing some research, I saw you did Def Jam.
Yeah.
You did Last Comic Standing?
Yeah.
Oh, you did Last Comic Standing?
I did.
What year?
My friend told me not to do it. And I probably shouldn't have listened, but I wasn't doing shit that year. So I said, hey, it'll be a chance to go to L.A. and I'll probably... And they tricked me like two or three times.
Yeah, there you go. And then I saw, what else? Comic View?
Yeah, Comic View. I did a lot of those.
Yeah.
And now a lot of young comics be like, I grew up watching you on Comic View.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, holy shit.
I used to religiously watch that shit. So I definitely probably saw you when I was younger.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how there's like, back then there were so many options to get on these television shows. And I understand that they didn't pay you guys well back then to do those shows. But now everyone's doing the same sort of thing with the internet and not getting paid at all.
Yeah, so it's like a weird.
It seems better, but it's actually worse.
Yeah.
Because now there's no Def Jam to go to. There's no Comic View to go to.
It more kind of stamped you as, you know, it was a smaller audience because it was just TV, you know.
Yeah.
I did Showtime with the Apollo. I did that too. I did that twice.
Oh, yeah.
I did all those little, you know, black shows back then, you know. And then,
And
I had a half hour special on Comedy Central.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Saw that as well, yeah. And then I saw really quickly. I saw, what was it called? Straight Plan for the Gay Man.
Yeah. That's so funny. That was a thing that Comedy Central did as a spoof.
Yeah.
To play off Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Yeah.
They were gay guys who straighten up a straight guy. We were a straight guys who ruin a queer guy's life. You know what I mean? Like, you had them leaving pizza boxes, and, you know, bowling and shooting guns and that, all kinds of manly stuff
in it.
Yeah, that was fun, man. That was a fun show to shoot.
The temperature has changed so much. Because if you did that show now, people would be all pissed off about it.
I think it's a great idea.
I just feel like he tape his eyes open and just playing straight porn.
Yeah. We messed up their apartments. They had like really nice apartments.
It's like Fear Factor, but it's vaginas. It's like
men don't use throw pillows.
Exactly.
He's excited for the first time. He's like, oh, guy walked in. Oh, girl walked in.
That's a good concept.
So when you left Miami, right? What was Miami comedy scene like? Is it kind of the way it is now, or is it...
No, Miami comedy scene was just the Miami Improv. It was actually just the Miami Improv. And then you had a few little shady promoters who did shows.
You ever work with
bars.
Larry Dog?
Larry Dog.
Yeah.
Larry actually was a new comic when I was... I used to host the Miami Improv regularly. That was like my spot. That's where I grew as a comic. That's where I got to meet all the New York comics when they came through. Because, you know, because I knew how to host. I didn't take up too much time. I did my time. I set the room right and then gave it to the headliner. and they respected it, and I know how to be around people. And plus, my girl was fine, so they respected me for that too. You know what I mean?
That helps. Like, you know, yeah,
that's right. It's like, that you? Oh, this nigga, you must be a man of respect.
Yeah. The same thing happens to me. Cause my wife never comes out to show. You met my wife when we did. All right. What did we do? It was some sort of fundraiser thing at like a wine tasting place. It was me. I went up first. Al Ernst went up, and then you headlined. It was in like a, how do I describe this?
Who's the producer?
Oh, I don't remember. It was the company, I think. Like the company hired all of us. Oh,
wow. Yeah, because it was like a
Aqua something or
yeah,
something.
I remember that vaguely in
it was
the
a
back of my head.
Big like ass big pavilion.
Venue. Yeah, pavilion. Yeah. Like glass.
White people all around in like in picnic like tables for real. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
way back.
Yeah. That was the first time I met you.
Oh, snap.
The funny thing is like, and I guess to you, like, we're new comics. So, like you said, like, we grew up watching you on Comic View and all that stuff. I remember we were in the, it was the first time I realized I was starting to, like, get somewhere as a comic.
Was it in Plantation or somewhere?
Somewhere like that. Yeah. It was south and then out in the middle of nowhere. But, yeah.
It sounds like the Plantation.
Oh.
They picked the tables and
it was at a wine
venue. Yeah. And they had different types of, out in the country.
Some get out.
Yeah, I remember that. But I remember I was with my wife. We were leaving the hotel and, like, this little hatchback, as you rented a car, comes swinging around the corner. I was like, oh shit, that's Kyle Grooms in that car. And I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot. I'm on the show with him tonight. Of course he's in the same hotel. But it's like, it was the first time I was like, oh shit, this is like hilarious. Like you're working with people. Yeah. Like, okay, this makes sense.
I was just going to say, like, I've done, I don't know how many shows with Chris, like, probably somewhere between like 30 and 50 at this point.
Yeah.
I've never seen his wife at a show until last night.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Is she hot? Okay. No, I'm kidding.
No, that's just me.
I'm kidding. Cover your ears.
Don't.
No, everybody's reaction is like, how is she your wife? I'm like, I'm fat, but I'm funny. So it's a little like.
Surprisingly, comics do tend to date up because we are mostly funny.
Yeah.
It's the only way we can get like.
Right,
yeah. It's gotta be funny.
So I got this in the fuck, man.
I've been married for 20 years, man.
Yeah, that's me too. Like, I got my most, because I've been in a relationship most of my comedy career.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember pussy back in the 1900s. That's when I stopped my list, you know?
That is a weird thing. I have this weird disappointment sometimes watching the young comics. Because I'm like, I didn't start comedy till after I was married.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, I'm just up here on stage wasting,
out
like.
In high school. You know?
Girl's gonna show you your boobs and eyes. Like, nah. Save it for the next guy.
L.A. Hardy's the only comic I've ever seen talk a woman into flashing him while he was on stage in front of the whole audience.
For me, it's Duncan J. Duncan's the only one I've ever seen.
Dude, Anna Lepley gets her. Gets
oh, yeah. Every show. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But Anna Lepley gets away, because Anna Lepley is like the coolest lesbian in the world. Like, she's like.
She had a girl do it for me, though, while I was on stage. That's how much lesbian power she has.
She's standing behind the curtain, like, show her tits.
Basically,
that's a residual level of cool. Yeah.
So, one thing that was interesting when I was. One of the things I remember from watching you at that Patrice O'Neill roast was. I think it was Rich Voss. Or no, was it Ben Bailey?
He
murdered at that roast.
He murdered.
It was like one of the most legendary. I didn't know he was that good.
It was a surprise to all of us because everybody was doing well, but then for Ben Bailey to go up and take it to here, it was just like. And the funny thing he said,
no,
Keith Robinson, Kevin Hart.
This is my number one.
Took Keith Robinson on his wing. He broke it off.
And flew away.
with it. And Kevin, Keith has been circling between Philly
and New York ever since.
Oh, geez, that shit choked the shit out of me. And then Keith Robinson went up and bombed afterwards. Which was kind of a relief because it was still funny, but it was like we didn't have the mental, you know.
Yeah.
It was just like,
I'm not trying to beat that. He set the bar low.
What's he said about Richard Voss? He said you look like a jockey that stole his horse's teeth. Like, it was so, it was one of the greatest. Whoa, like, wow. Because you, he's the guy from Cash Cabs. So you're not thinking like he's gonna be that funny. And I was like, holy
shit!
His
stand up is good too. Like, I've watched because again, like I know him from that.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me the roast of Patrice. I had never watched it before, and I watched it all. Man.
Yeah.
And then, from that, I was like, I
got to
see what this guy does.
Oh, yeah, he's good. Man, he's and he could break down small things. Like, I remember he had a bit about a parka. He was breaking down what a parka is.
So I guess that's a good question since you've been in the game so long. What do you think is, like, the key aspect to roasting somebody?
Ooh. A little line of the truth. And to be honest, my roasting game is... I don't know, I used to roast in college, high school, like, you know, and if you're an audience member, I'll roast you, but I've never been in a roast battle, just like peer on peer. Yeah, it's just like,
I won't do it.
It's just not,
I don't know, man. Feelings.
I've done two of them, and they're not, I prefer the panel roast, like that's much better, like the traditional roast.
Yeah, like, if there's a contest and I'm judging, I could back and forth, but to sit and write material, I don't know, it's just demeaning. Unless I know you personally, then it's kind of like those are the people I kind of back and forth with.
Yeah.
Because it's weird, because if I don't know you, the only thing I can do is go to like your Facebook and just think of mean shit about your family. Like,
I guess you could, but
that's just foul. Like,
I've never worked that muscle. I've never been even invited to a roast.
Your girl got a mole on her neck.
I've judged roasts before where I was just a panel, but I never had to.
I know a guy who, in Central Florida here, who's in contact with the people who run like the actual roast battle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because we have one locally, but it's not like sanctioned, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And I think we're gonna actually have like real roast battle in Central Florida here.
That'd be cool.
Is that a thing? Is it like a?
Yeah,
it's like Jeff a company,
Ross,
right?
Brian Moses and Jeff Ross.
Oh, really?
They own it. Yeah, and Brian Moses started it in the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. Like they used to do it in the Belly Room or whatever. And then now, like, you know, the whole movement has went to Austin, so that's like the hub is now. Mm-hmm. And they have them, like, they have international roast battles, but you can't use the name roast battle unless you're affiliated with them. Mm-hmm. So like
most MMA people, type shit.
But like even our local one's called like the Weenie Roast. You know what I mean? It's not
that's roast hilarious. Battle.
Yeah. So, so I think we might actually have something sanctioned here in the next. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask, because I remember during that roast, one of the I think it was, maybe it was Voss or somebody, but somebody was like, yeah, Kyle, nobody gives a shit that you were a comic in Florida, right? And I noticed that for some reason, like, Miami's to me, top five cities in
Ben
the country.
Ben Bailey said that.
Yeah, it was Ben Bailey.
He said that, and he said something else, but anyways.
To me, Miami's like one of the top cities in the country. Miami's known worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, Miami comedy, I think, doesn't get the respect that it deserves.
Because it's hard.
No. Right? Yeah, and because there's no one really of note who came from Miami that is a comedian. You know what I mean?
But there's a bunch of killers all over the place. But I guess they didn't become like...
There's a lot of Florida comics that don't get described as Florida comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Carrot
Top. Well, but I mean, like, Daniel Tosh. Like, Daniel Tosh.
No, he's from the bar.
Daniel Tosh is a
Carrot Top. Yeah, he's from there.
Daniel Tosh are from
Rocky. But it's not like, and Carrot Top, too. And,
they're from Rocky.
You know?
I mean, Preacher Lawson, who's huge now, from Orlando.
Lucy Sloan was from, but she came after me.
But there's not the clubs. You can't Google, be in Miami and Google Comedy Club and get a bunch of hits.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, it's going to be like, oh, it's a Tuesday night thing or whatever.
Yeah.
The Improv, when it was in the Grove, it kind of had like there was something about that when it was upstairs too. It was, I think Miami's a good place to start comedy just because it's international enough. People don't give a fuck about you enough to go to New York, and then you go to New York, it's like, man, I've been in Miami Party City where, people are doing coke and they're worried about, so you could conquer New York,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, that's what I always have been told really by like guys that have been doing it for a long time is like Florida's a real litmus of comedy because you get, it's a tourist area. So like a lot of your audience members are from all over the place. It's not just like Floridians you're doing stand-up.
And they're coming to Florida not looking to go to comedy clubs. Right. You want to be outdoors, the sun, the this, the that.
Yeah.
But I think with the way Miami is now, it's just mega clubs, comedy, it's probably ready for comedy now because a lot of New Yorkers moved down here, a lot of Northerners, and you know, if you can bring the quality up.
Well, I know during the pandemic, they had like a surge of comedians down there, Schultz and the whole crew.
So what do you think is the key to catching the attention of like a Miami audience?
Crowd work.
That probably is. Because Carlos Mencia used to do amazingly here. They want you to be real, talk shit. Pablo Francisco used to fucking murder Miami, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to be lively, you have to be, you know.
You have to speak Spanish?
Because the only big, like Marvin Dixon is from Miami, Black Circuit. But that's the thing, because Black is one thing and then Cuban is another, because they want, you know, Benji Brown. The Cuban community don't know about Benji Brown and Marvin Dixon over there. But maybe Marcelo Hernandez, you know, he might be he might be the Miami, the comic from Miami, because he's repping the Latino culture. And like, you know.
Yeah.
Like being a comic from Miami, there's no real like, you know.
Yeah.
Because what I think about Miami, because there's a room in Orlando that I always tell people, it's Unico, what is it, Unico? Unico or whatever.
Yeah.
That they took a Miami room and put it in Orlando. It's like it's all Puerto Ricans and Cubans and shit and whatever. But what I noticed the difference with a Miami room is like most everywhere else, when people come to the comedy show, they're excited to be at the comedy show. They're like, this is going to be our entertainment for tonight. Miami crowds, the comedy show is kind of just the pre-thing before they actually really go out for real. So they, like you said, they don't really care about you that much. So you have to actually get their attention. Like in New York, they're sitting down and they're like, this is our thing. In Miami, it's like, unless you make them pay attention, they don't give a shit about you.
You can do that by making it a paid show, first of all. When people pay, they're going to be paying attention. And a lot of, you know, shows are free entry.
But I will say this, audiences do stay until the end, like they'll stay sitting, you know, watching
and talking.
But when I was a star, you could only do two lines, you had to be funny. Like when I started, back when, like especially the Black crowds in Miami, Tuesday night, even a Monday night, if you wasn't funny, boom! Get your poor ass off that stage.
They do that here too. Just watch my set, you'll see.
You know, this is my favorite question to ask since we've been in the game so long. Culturally, which is the hardest audience to perform?
I think Black Southern crowds, Chicago crowds, Black crowds really, because sometimes you got to set yourself on fire, you know what I mean? Or you have to go in with it. I feel I have to go in with a connection, you know? You got to connect, because, you know, your outfit even. And I get that a lot just because, you know, I wear glasses. I don't, you know, I go up on stage. So,
yeah.
You know, I get the...
Where they just judge you right away?
No matter what? When I first started going to Chicago, I would go there, they would book me as a headliner. And then they would see me, like the host, and be like, I'm going to put you up first. But I was like, okay, I'm cool with it, you know what I mean? Because then I get to get my shit out of the way, I get to rock.
Yeah.
When I go up in that bitch, you know. Kill it, do what I do.
I was gonna say, do you just bury the rest of the people?
Yeah, because coming from Miami, you know, and I was already, you know, I already was swinging my sword, you know, so I just go in, you know,
cut him up.
And then they'd be like, all right, good. And then they'd be like, oh, shit. I used to love it. I used to love being underestimated and because then, you know, then I don't have to follow
30 locals.
Because then the locals go up and, you know, they're all funny.
That's cool, man.
Let me ask you this, because you're the, I just realized, you're the first person I can ask this question to. So the table at the Comedy Cellar, right?
Yeah.
So you said when you first came to New York, that's when you were hooked up with Patrice O'Neal and all those guys. Yeah. What was it like being the new guy and then getting to the point where you were respected in that group?
Yeah. Well, the way I got respected in that group, one day they all came in. I was sitting at the table by myself. And it was my turn to get roasted by everyone. Like, everybody was at the table just lit a match, and I couldn't even do nothing.
Who was at the table?
Patrice, like,
that's
Keith,
enough.
Keith Robinson, Wilson Vince, like, you know, Patrice's girl, Patrice's
Vaughn
was there, and she was like, no, stop it! Oh, I didn't even know Vaughn that well all the time. But she
it's so much worse. Like, someone's like, no, not him.
Please.
How's the sweet boy?
Oh, stop it. Like, but the shit was so funny. You know, if they funny, you know, you can't help but.
Yeah.
And I was losing my hair at the time, but you don't know when to shave, you don't know how your shit is. And Patrice threw some like salt and pepper on the table and was like, this is how the barber cuts Kyle's hair. 1, 2, 3, counting the salt and pepper. It just destroyed me that day.
Just got home to shave.
I've seen them make people throw away clothing, articles, and
You like buy a new shirt, you're like, oh, this
is
awesome.
Yeah,
because
you're going there confident. Yeah. You know, you got your new leather jacket because you've been doing college. You go there.
Chris has actively said we need to bring back, like, shaming other comics.
But it's changed, though. Yeah.
We're competitive, sorry.
Yeah.
We both agreed that we like the competitiveness, and I was talking about this with you earlier. I love the competitive part, and I love Chris for that shit too. So sorry.
No, but yeah, like he's actively said, like, we just need to start.
Because that's what
I think that's what the basis of comedy. That's where most comedians come from. Like Keith Robinson had an album called Back of the Bus Funny.
Yeah.
It's people on the back of the bus who like, look at you this, look at you that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if but your nobody, parents, they bring your parents into
but
it.
Nobody has stories like the one you just told.
Because I was going to say, it's changed because now you go to the cellar and it's kind of division and people are like sensitive about me. I remember the new comics used to come in and not like to see Patrice. A lot of people didn't like to see Patrice coming or taste that, why are you picking on me type shit? Like, it's not, it's changed.
Well, and that's gotten them. That's the thing, though. Like, the way I was raised is you talk shit to the one you love.
You love,
and you don't say anything to the people you don't like.
Yeah.
Dude, I got off stage, I did it, I won't say what show or when or whatever, but I got off stage and it was somebody I was super cool with. I was like, yo, I fucked that shit up. Good luck. And he took it very sensitively and didn't fuck with me after that.
Like, what did you say?
I did not even insult you. I just was flexing for a second.
I know I've said it on the pod before, but when I first started, I came out of straight bullying. Whoa. And I remember a comic coming up to me after I bombed on stage, putting his hand on my shoulder. He put his hand on my shoulder and goes, hey, you wasted everybody's time.
But I just think that stuff makes you stronger, you know, and they don't do it anymore. And I think that's why comics are weak and can't handle stuff now.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of going out after somebody bombs me and like, let's give this guy another moment of silence.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah, we used to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, It's funny.
I remember there was a contest when we were all competing to, you know, like a Slitch Malt Liquor Bowl contest or some shit. And people were bombing. Yeah, I don't know. We could have been. Could have been something. One of the liquor, malt liquor companies that was promoting black comedy. The comics were bombing, and we were like, emergency, we need 3 cc's of Eddie Murphy. Two doses of Richard Pryor, hit him with a little clear, like, you know.
That's crazy.
So
what brought you back down to Florida?
Kids, my nigga. I had been on the New York comedy scene for 14 years. I felt I earned my bones. I had enough recognition, and I had my children, and I got tired of going through the tunnel because I live in Jersey, but you know, mm-hmm. I just going through the tunnel, doing the whole going around the spots. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like with the comedy cell and the clubs, it seemed like it was a younger audience, and I felt like I graduated high school but still hanging around the high school shit. You know what I mean?
You're the janitor now?
Yeah. I never wanted to be, you know, stink up the place, you know? So, I figured I'd go somewhere in, Miami. And
how long have you been back here?
2016.
Okay. So 2016.
And I go back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
And I find out people don't even know you moved sometimes. You know?
Really?
And then, 2019 I had a seizure and brain surgery, and then that was kind of like, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember your whole special was sort of around that.
Brain seizure special.
Mm. Brain seizure
brain
special.
Humor. Yeah. And then, but I go back and forth to New York, and I show up once in a while to, just say, hey, look, I'm still here.
Have you
saw
all, the connections haven't changed and all that kind
of thing? Yeah, I could still go sit at the table and, get a discount meal at the Olive Tree.
I hope. That's the thing about comedy, though. It's kind of like you said, sometimes we only realize you move. You'll meet somebody that you haven't seen in a hot minute, and comics will pick right back up like you never left.
And the internet, too, you get to see what people are doing, you know? It's like, you get to see them. The only thing I miss is just being in the rooms and being at the festivals and see, like, I know Chappelle's been at the Stand all week, and, I'll be there watching them work and just be part of the comedy scene. And, Netflix festival. I just like going to shit like that because it's like a family reunion, you know? So, comics that you've been in the trenches with. You haven't seen it in a long time.
Did you ever do Just for Laughs before it shut down? Really? We're never going to get to do Just for Laughs.
You never know, man. It could come back.
I did New Faces in like 2004, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny they call it New Faces, but most of the people there are like 10
older
years
than
a
motherfucker.
Yeah.
You've been doing this shit 20 years. You're a new face.
Yeah.
We've never seen you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think I did when people stopped getting deals.
Worst timing.
I think Todd Lynn got a deal. I think Cat Williams got a deal that year. Cat Williams is a new face. Magical.
Yeah, but they canceled it because he wouldn't wear a dress.
Nah.
Yeah. Let me ask you, what do you think the current beef between all of the famous comics? Have they always been like this? It just happened that they started talking about it publicly?
It's like no matter what success, I'm out here, people who, it's like you would think someone would be happy with the level of success and the money and the thing and not be bitching and, waking up on New Year's and doing an interview where you're calling out people that stole your jokes.
Yeah.
From 30 years ago, we've all had jokes stolen.
Yeah.
My attitude has always been, the sharks feed the fish, And, you keep writing and, you inspire other people and, that's a sign you're doing well. But the beefing and the bickering, it's like, can't we all just get along at some point on some level? So, everything with us gotta be beef.
Moving those chairs as loud as humanly possible.
You know what I mean? Everything got to be beef. But I do respect the part of it about telling you the truth. no matter how uncomfortable it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a muscle that, you know, I still have tact, and I have to be, you know, if a comic disrespect me, I gotta go say so. I'm not gonna get on a pass and blow. But part of, maybe that's part of the art that they're doing, you know, it's not all beautiful art. You know what I mean? It's not all, you know.
Yeah.
But
that always happens, though. I mean, people passing around Cosby stories before that shit ever really made public.
What did Cosby do?
That's all right.
I heard he stole a bunch of
jokes. He stole something.
But for comics that can do that, like Corey Holcomb, like some of the stuff he does is like, but the fact that he has the muscle to do that, and he ain't really hurt nobody, and part of it is truth, even if it's not, it's just him saying something that's inappropriate and it's entertaining to me.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Until he says something about me.
Yeah. But do you think, like, that attitude is a part of why there isn't a comedian union? Like, the actors have an actual union with health insurance and all that kind of.
Comedian is so. Because you kind of have to act, you have to sign a contract with a studio, have to put you in a movie, you know. I could see that, but for comics, there's no union. Like, you know, I'm not gonna. Who am I gonna tell the union I'm doing this show tonight? And how are they gonna? How is it? How can you?
There's no organization for comics.
Have an organization like that because there's so many different levels.
Well, like, and everybody individually is different. You know what I mean? Like I'm in a union. You know, so I know the inner workings of being in a union and like. Every city, every state has their own ways of paying people, different prices, different everything. And I don't think there's a way to standardize any of that. You know what I mean? Like, all of them collectively have to just be like, all right, we're going to pay them more. You know, like...
When I went to New York, we actually did, because when I went to New York, the clubs were paying comics like... $10 for the week, and then on the weekend maybe like $50.
Yeah.
And then the comics just got together, unionized. I remember everybody, Patrice, Greg Giraldo, Jim Norton, like every comic in New York just met up and was like, nah, we, and then the comic, then the clubs raised their rates.
So we doubled our money.
Doubled to $20.
Because we all band together, you know. Mm-hmm. L.A. didn't do that, you know. But L.A. still...
They did in the 70s, though, right? Because, like, when they were doing the Comedy Store versus... They were, like, kind of beefing between the Improv and the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, if you work that club, you can't work this one. And then they all kind of collectively got together and were like, first off, y'all need to start paying us, you know.
So yeah, New York did it in about 2005, 2004, and that's why the rates are that you get now on the weekends. You know.
When you were up there, did you ever do the Opie and Anthony show?
No, and I'm glad I didn't.
You didn't go. Yeah,
you did tough crowd, but you didn't do Opie.
Nah, I didn't do Opie and Anthony because I wasn't totally there. Nah, me.
Why are you
glad I did? Just because, you know, just to. Way, yeah, I don't even want to talk about it.
It's a
notorious as crybabies.
No, Anthony Cumia, he's straight out racist. Like, he's straight out.
That too.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
And it's like, there's some racism out there, you know, because I grew up with New York, Long Island, boy, and you know, even Long Island Italians, and you know, they black, they talk jokes about black, and we talk, you know, that, but this shit is another level.
It's just like,
he posts on Twitter, just all black niggas. Like anything the niggas doing, you know, it could be other people doing it too, but it's just robbing, beating, you know. But you can show a white person doing the exact same thing, but nah, it's just that one.
And that's the hashtag he uses, you know, hashtag anything a nigga doing.
I mean, all of us, all 13% is doing crime.
I did not know that, and it's funny because I grew up in Boston listening to them, and I never realized that.
And
which
even
is weird, as a young black man, I didn't realize.
And even like say Nick DiPaolo, and I love Nick. Nick's cool, but you know, like he kind of went all the way to it. He leaned way up.
His sets
even appreciate. Even if the shit is funny, I'll laugh. And if there's a hint of,
but his sets now are just him complaining about the kids these days. That's his whole set now. He's just up there
Jim
mad.
Martin was their boy too, and I love Jim.
Oh yeah,
Jim's very far, white, as well.
Can I ask you about Chappelle Show?
Sure.
How did that come about? Obviously you probably knew Chappelle at the time.
Chappelle and I worked once together at Uncle Funny's in Davie. And when I met Chappelle, he goes, "You look familiar." But the way I got into the Chappelle Show, Neil Brennan was working out at the Boston Comedy Club, and I thought he was just like a new comic. He kind of was a new comic, just working out material, thinking he was writing, so he wanted to see if he could do comedy. And I was like, "Yo, man, your shit is good, bro. You should stick in it, though." You know, I was giving him words of encouragement, just had him. And he goes, "I am the co-owner of the Chappelle, like co-writer."
That was Neil Brennan saying, "Shut the fuck up."
Politely. He goes, "I can give you work. Would you be interested in I wasn't that douchebaggy, but
let me punch up a scene for you.
But then he told me I could audition. He said, "You want to come by and read for a part?" And he was like, "It's a gay part." And I was like, and get in the back.
Cat Williams was right.
Before game is cool. But I was like, "I won't be the gay character, but I'll be." He goes, "No, Chappelle's going to do one too." I was like, "Oh, okay. Then
I'll do it." As long as we're gay together.
Brandon's just trying to talk how to do a gay porn.
Chappelle's going to do it.
I didn't know Puff sponsored the Chappelle Show. I gotta run. So thank you so much for coming early to do this. Appreciate it. And I hope y'all have a killer show tonight.
It should be good.
Thank you, man.
We haven't had a bad one here. This has always been good.
Does the restaurant close for the comedy show, or do people just come in thinking, "Hey"?
So they're setting it up now. They sell 80 tickets right by the stage. And then the bar area is free entrance. Occasionally they get a little rowdy. You gotta be like, "Hey, y'all, shut the fuck up," and then they calm down. You know, but overall, I mean, it's consistently been really good here. And it packs, because sometimes you'll have the bar packed, you'll have the 80 seats here packed, you'll have people in this room, and then they pipe the audio out to the outside patio. Yeah. So like the first
people on the golf course.
The first show we did here, there was like 150 people here. Holy so.